Native Solar's energy experts will design and install energy-producing, money-saving solar panels on your home or business that will decrease your electricity bills while increasing the value of your property and the quality of your life. Take your power back at nativesolar.com.
Hi, this is David J. Naff, and you're listening to the Weird Homes Podcast. Have you ever walked through your neighborhood, taken a look at a strange or weird home, and wondered, who lives there? What's inside of that home? Well, I think as human beings, we've all have done that. And that's what this podcast is all about, is to explore the weird and strange world of the people who live in those homes. Hey, everybody. This is David J. Naff with the Weird Homes Podcast.
And this is Shelley Naff.
And today we have a very special guest, Steve Wyman, who's the owner of Uncommon Objects in here, a longtime Austinite. And he's going to talk to us about a whole range of different subjects, art, collecting, owning a business, being an entrepreneur, and lots of other subjects. So thanks for being here today.
You are welcome. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So tell us a little bit. We'll kind of jump around in the timeline here.
Sure.
But tell me a little bit about Uncommon Objects and how you first started that, or even maybe thought about, hey, yeah, I want to open a business in Austin, Texas.
I didn't think that I wanted to open a business, and it happened very organically. So I had been to graduate school in Austin in the mid-80s and moved to Dallas and did a corporate job doing some restaurant design work for a number of years. And in that job, I ended up meeting lots of people in the junk business, in the antique and resale business. We were buying artifacts for a restaurant chain, and so sourcing lots of stuff from lots of different places. And I learned a lot about that little subculture, and it's a weird little group of people who do that. And I joined that club and started selling at the flea markets in Dallas, and then at Citywide Garage Sale in Austin. And eventually we found our way back to live in Austin in 91. So I moved into someone else's shop. I didn't open it. But they decided shortly after to give it up. So it was either move on or take it over. And a friend and I decided to take it over, and we grew the business from there.
And what was the little decision point of like, hey, I don't want to do the corporate restaurant chain, decorating and designing, and actually I'm just going to work, you know, with a partner for myself, basically.
Yeah. It wasn't a conscious plan to move from one to the other, but the thing that took me away from the corporate situation was freelance or contract labor, and did, you know, buy the project, and somebody pulled me aside at the company and said, you know, if you'd cut your hair, I think you might get a job offer. And I was out on the job, and I decided I would give that a try. So I cut my hair, and surprisingly, I got a job offer within a few weeks. And I took that opportunity to quit because I didn't want to work for a corporate. Was valuing me for how I presented physically and not for the incredible work that I'd done for them for years. So that's how I left corporate America and ended up in working for myself, being an independent operator.
Yeah, it always happens. It grabs you. You don't look for it, like with most people. That's for sure. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Snyder, and as a high school student, worked a job with distributive education. So because I felt like I didn't fit in, so I figured out a way to not only spend half the day at school and then the other half the day at a job.
Nice.
And I worked in a craft store. And I realize now, looking back on that experience of having, you know, learned a business when I was a teenager and sort of absorbed just lots of stuff that was smart and logical from that time frame. So I use that stuff all the time now.
What brought you to Austin? Was it
graduate school brought me to Austin? Yeah. I got into the program and got a master's of fine arts in studio art. And
it's all making sense.
The best thing about that graduate experience was just the community of people that I built around that. And a lot of those people are still a part of my life today.
Tell us a little bit about your art and why, how'd you go from Snyder, Texas? You said working half the time, going to school, like through your high school years. Were you actively creating art or did that develop in college?
As a kid was always involved in some kind of project. So at Christmas, I would get a bottle cutting kit or a painting set or wood burning set or tie dye or, so there was always, I was always making something and doing something. And when I wrote my letter to apply to graduate school, I included a copy of a handwritten letter of what do you want to be when you grow up that I had written in about third grade.
Oh, wow.
And it said, I want to be an artist. And so I knew from an early, it was a surprise to find that, but I knew from an early age that that was kind of what my sensibility was.
Sounded like you had pretty supportive parents if they're
buying you
wood burning kits. I was like, that's amazing.
Paper mache all over the kitchen table,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was always something. And they were very supportive and I got, art lessons, painting class. On Friday afternoons, every Friday afternoon, and I did that for years. And Miss Patton lived down the street, so I walked with my paints and my canvas down the street to the Miss Patton's paint studio.
That's awesome.
So, you've been on our tour. Can you explain to everyone what your home is like?
It's a collection of collections, is what I would describe it. And my wife and I are both from really kind of modest homes. Mm-hmm. The homes that we both grew up in were very spare. There wasn't a lot of stuff. And so we both had sort of that collector gene in us.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got together, we started one of our first collections was lunch boxes. And I think I told you guys the story about when we finally got ready to start trying to buy a house, we looked around to try to figure out what we had that was worth anything that might be a down payment. And our lunchbox collection turned into our down payment for our home. So that was very fortunate, to have picked stuff up for, $2 and $5 each and cashed them out at a higher rate.
Was it the whole collection collectively or just one?
It was the whole collection.
Yeah.
And that's how we were able to make what we needed. And then we each got to keep, Emily and I, and then the Atticus and Sophie, the kids each got to keep one lunchbox from that original collection. So that as a souvenir from that time. And I still carry my Beverly Hillbillies lunchbox to work at Uncommon Objects. So
I wish I would have kept mine.
I know, right?
tell me about your personal art that you've done or changed. And obviously you have installations and you've been published and you have shows.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about that.
As a kid, when I would always have the project going, it sort of turned into melding with the collector sensibility that I developed as a young adult. And I was finding stuff on the street. And that's kind of how I grew my art career and my business, both. And it's sort of recognizing value or something inherent in things that other people may overlook or pass by, and recognizing it as valuable or seeing it as beautiful and pulling it into the right light and showing somebody else how to look at it. And I think that's, that's how the art career came about, was picking junk up on the street and then putting it together to build other things.
That's amazing.
David, you bring things home from your jocks sometimes.
I do.
I don't.
I have. I have
2%.
I have 2% of your talent.
So yeah. And he'll be like, look at this. It's a dirty Barbie leg. And I'm like, What are we, why did you bring that to
Halloween party.
I wish we had the eye you had.
Well, one of you does.
Yeah.
You just have to let David have his windowsill where he can put his things. And
yeah. Yeah. He puts it in the garage. So. Yeah.
Ours is always Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's true.
We, cause I jog every morning or try to every morning. And there's always just the most interesting stuff in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is like a little handwritten note from a kid or a weird drawing.
Or the Santa Claus that's playing the drums. He brought that. Yeah.
And I was just like, how amazing that this kid drew that. It fell out of their backpack. And now we have it like at our Halloween party with like a mm-hmm. really weird mm-hmm. purple light on it. Yeah. You know, and it's just slightly, normally you'd be like, oh, that's beautiful. A kid drew that. And then you just light it weird. And then all of a sudden it,
yeah.
to your point, takes on like a different point of view of like, oh, that's kind of weird and creepy.
Context. It's all about context.
You're listening to the Weird Homes Podcast.
Hello, this is Shelley Neff with the Weird Homes Podcast, and I am a big fan of Native Solar. I've had them on my house for 3 years, and did you know they are one of the longest-running, most established, Texas-owned and operated solar installation companies in the state? Take your power back. Visit nativesolar.com. Well, Steve, what's the weirdest or strangest thing in your house?
Oh, man. There's a human skull, and that is something that speaks to people in both really good and really bad ways.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've got so many different collections that the puzzle balls you guys may remember from when you were in the house, the carved ivory. And now I have some carved jade ones. I don't know if I had those when you guys were there.
Yeah.
But they're layers of a ball inside a ball inside a ball inside a ball. And it's all carved by someone who knew what they were doing and knew how to do that.
Tell me about, you have that, is it like a Wunder cabinet of like all the little things? Like, explain what the heck that is to folks listening and then tell us a little bit about that.
Wunder cabinet, the cabinet of Wunder was something that happened when world exploration started happening, when people would go out and to lands that had never been explored before, and they'd bring back specimens. They'd bring back specimens of seashells or pieces of taxidermy or leaf specimens, or, you know, all sorts of natural things.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd try to build your cabinet bigger and better than the guy in the castle down the street. It was a way to, you know, show off what you were able to accumulate. And so the cabinet that we've got is probably 18th century, maybe 17th, and a little set of drawers. And I've seen some in museums around the world. And, you know, ours is fairly simple and kind of plain, but each drawer is full of treasure in the spirit of the tradition. So there's a great book, Mr. Wilson's Cabinet of Wonder. It's a nonfiction and talks about the Museum of Jurassic Technology in LA. If you haven't been there, you need to try to go.
Yeah, we've heard good things about that.
Yeah, it's a wacky, wacky book.
And so, Steve, with Uncommon Objects, how involved with picking everything are you? Is it still all of you in there? I mean, how much do you do? What is your day job? Just map that out for me.
Yeah. Because it's a group shop, mm-hmm. there are, you know, 28 different people who accumulate and are out there finding new stuff mm-hmm. all the time. And I am an enthusiastic participant in that. You know, I spent yesterday out at Round Top and the big antique fair is just sort of getting started out there. And I mean, there was some fantastic stuff. I enjoyed having a day on my own out in the out in the junk world, finding stuff.
We're going in 2 weeks.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could go tomorrow and then go back in 2 weeks.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Totally different experience every time you go. But I'm at the shop almost every morning and do projects, mm-hmm. call it visual project, of remerchandising and putting new inventory in. And I'm, like I said, almost every single morning of the week there. And that keeps my hand on the inventory and lets me see what new has come in. And nobody ever gets to see it all. It's
right.
It's a, yeah. this never-ending flow of stuff through the front door and out the front door. And it makes you crazy to miss out on something that, you know, I would have bought that if I'd seen it first.
I feel like the layout of your store, when people go in it, it makes sense. A lot of places, it's just like, I'm overwhelmed. I can't, but colors and themes and everything's kind of mapped out in a certain way where you can, where you will see more things than I feel like you would in other places. And I feel like that's a big part of you, because when I see your house, it matches that.
Yep.
Yeah.
The house feels a lot like the shop.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That color, creating color stories mm-hmm. within the shop space is just one way. You know, we didn't invent it,
yeah.
But we utilize it and make good use of it, I think. And it's just figuring out a way to focus someone's attention so that it's, you eliminate a lot of the extraneous colors and you get it down to just a really pleasing, easy to look at little story.
Yeah.
And that's something that we use there all the time. And the most exciting thing for me, and it continues to be even after years of doing it, is moving those color stories around and making new ones constantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk to me just a little bit. So as you think of those color stories and then you think of your store and then you think of your home, for folks listening, you know, I'm always obsessed with all of the Masons and like, all the kind of like secret society and all that stuff. And you guys obviously have great collections of that. The hats or the staffs or like all these ceremonial objects used by the Masons and these kind of secret societies from, you know, 1800s, things like that. So if I'm super into that, how would I bring that into my home? Right. Like, what's your kind of pro tip on that? Because I think a lot of people listening are always kind of have something that they're like, I just love that so much, but I don't want it to be in the garage or the Halloween stuff. And so,
right.
But I don't know if I want a whole room of that, but like, how do you bring some of that stuff into your living space? Do you have some
one piece at a time mm-hmm. and really following your gut? If, mm-hmm. if it's something that speaks to you, and the reason that you're not going to try to have it in your living space is because you don't know how to do that, then you need to just shake that off and or take it home and find a place for it. I think the people who are most happy with their living space environments are the people who have done the process of editing and getting rid of anything that's not going to speak to them or make them happy. And the people, like the obsessive people on your Weird Homes tour, who hoard or sure. bring, you know, they
2000
they
Fred
for the gold,
Flintstone.
You know, if, yeah.
yeah, things, yeah.
If 15's really interesting, then 5,000 is probably going to be a lot more interesting. I don't know. But that the hoarder sensibility that I've seen in a lot of the homes that mm-hmm. I've been to on the tour, you know, like mine, it's being open and sensitive to the stuff talking to you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's, there's a dialogue that happens with objects if you let it happen with objects. I don't even know why we can still be in business when Restoration Hardware and Target can make such incredible things that look
very
old
true.
And very yeah. authentic and real. Yeah. And the reason is that those things can't talk because they don't have the story to tell because
right.
they're
the energy.
They're inauthentically
yeah.
old.
Yeah.
And something that has authentic age to it, which is what we've kind of built our business around, are things that have a story and tell their story.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, so on telling the story, what's what's maybe the oldest thing you've ever purchased? And you know, some outlawed Egyptian archaeology piece or
mummy. Yeah.
In the very early days, I think it was 92, Ed Gage, my business partner at the time, was had bought a piece of amber, and it had an insect in the amber. And it was before Jurassic Park. So it was, you know, after Jurassic Park, everybody knows about insects being preserved in amber.
Sure.
And DNA being present there.
Right.
But at that time, it was an anomaly, and it sold for, you know, a good amount of money and made him happy and made the person buying it happy. We like that win-win situation where everybody comes out with what they need. I had a collection of bovine hairballs, and this was, I was at a shopping at a market one time, and the guy said, I got something I think you're going to want. Wow. And he had it in a box behind the table, you know, under the table. And it's from a butcher would take these from the stomach of the cow.
Oh my God.
So
okay.
You think about, how cows lick themselves and you know how hair in your drain won't go away.
Yeah. Right.
Like, forever, it's a forever thing. It would go into the stomach and bind, you know, and if you didn't know what it was, it just looks like this little ball.
But,
having that little story to go with it.
Oh my gosh.
So good.
Who bought that?
Cattleman, of course. Yeah.
Of course.
But I'd put them together in a little display box. So it was just like this exquisite little collection of odd things. And then when you knew what they were, they became that much more.
Yeah.
And then maybe what's the most expensive thing that you've sold? Oh, gosh, this really is an antique car.
The IRS are listening. Be careful.
Yeah. Okay. I can't even answer the question. Okay. I don't know.
Wow.
You know, aesthetic value plays such a greater part for me when I'm looking at stuff and experiencing stuff. Yeah. Than the dollar sign.
Yeah, I get it. And Steve, so you recently, I mean, maybe not that recent, but you moved from South Congress to a new location.
Yeah, we were on South Congress Avenue for 26 years in that same block. And it was very sobering for us to have to move, but it was economics. We just couldn't afford to stay in the neighborhood. And now that we've moved, we feel really super happy with our new spot. It's in a weird little neighborhood. The streets are run down. There's potholes, floods, and it's just a perfect place for us.
That's awesome.
And we're able to do some things that we were never able to do at our other location. We're hosting some workshops.
Right.
We have a little bit more room to move things around and make some space to throw some tables out and do a class. Book signings. And the best thing we're doing is our flea market. And the last Sunday of every month, we host a flea market in the backyard.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was no space for that on South Congress.
Right.
Right.
And it's gotten a little following. And now we have a nice crowd every time we throw a market. And we've got the dealers coming in from out of state to come set up for the day. And it's a one day thing. So it's short and sweet and in and out. And there's been some amazing things pass through that backyard.
That's such a good
bargains.
Idea.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Where do you see the future of South Congress right now?
I think it's going to continue losing the thing that built the neighborhood in the beginning, and that is small mom and pop businesses and that were genuinely interesting because they were driven by someone's passion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that still exists there.
There's, right.
You know, Parts and Labor, Monkey See, Monkey Do, Big Top, Tesoros. Those are all fantastic local businesses that thrive because they're good, interesting business models.
Yeah.
And I know that what I see when I go down on South Congress now is just a move towards, you know, more corporate big box. And I will mention this, that the vanity projects that are happening or a new kind of retail model where you can have a beautiful showroom and make all your sales online.
Right.
Somebody comes in and takes the pictures of what they want and then they go home and order it. And then you don't have to schlep
it.
You don't, you know, it gets delivered straight to your door.
Right.
So as that increases and as, you know, Warby Parker and Yeti and businesses of that sort move into that neighborhood, the other kinds of businesses like ours will be displaced. But I do think that there is a place for retail. Interesting retail right now is having a really hard time because of those things I just mentioned. But I believe truly that in 10 years, people are going to look around and go, wait, where are all those shops?
Yeah.
Where are all my favorite places?
Where are all my favorite places to go? Well, right. They're not there anymore because right. You went home and ordered stuff online that looked right. Like the stuff that you were going to get at that shop. So my pitch to everybody is support local business. If you like going shopping or taking your friends out to show them off yep. All the cool shops, spend a little bit of money there.
Yeah.
Throw some money into local economy.
Well, no one can compare to the experience of walking through your store.
It's an experience.
It's unlike nothing else.
But if you like it.
Yes. Love it. Yeah.
Come buy a key.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, you know, two small business owners with you at the table, right? Of her salon and then of the Weird Home Tour. Although we're in several cities, we work hard to not be an alien that moves into the city, but hiring local people and working with local artists and trying to figure out what that scene looks like and grow year after year and donate back into that particular economy. But we were in some place on South Congress, which I will not name, and it was like velour tracksuits and a live music stage and a Pac-Man arcade game and a lounge and pool. And everyone was doing everything else but buying clothes, to your point, because I'm kind of here to like play a game of Pac-Man, watch this band perform, and then like, oh yeah, there's tracksuits here, but I'm going to go home and order that tracksuit online. Yeah. And that company's like, we're fine with it because Absolutely. We're backed by $400 million of venture capital money, and that is a showroom, and I don't even count sales from that.
It's just to build a brand
and be cool.
Use a retail space to just do brand building and branding and make it a nice experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People have fun and then they like your brand and that's a new thing that wasn't, it didn't exist on the planet.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
10 years ago.
Right.
That's right.
It used to be when you rented a storefront, you had to make something happen inside that storefront that brought people in and made them want to buy things, or you were supplying something that was needed in the community. And, you know, I look at Walmart and Lowe's and those big box that took away all the little mom and pop, you know, the hardware store and the, I remember in Snyder going with my mom to the S&H Green Stamp store.
Yes, I remember going there with my grandmother.
You know,
I don't know what that is.
Yes. So
you'd get free green stamps when you bought your...
there was like the little booklets,
groceries, and they
right?
were in books, and you'd stick them in. Mm-hmm. And I love sticking those stamps in the book. And then you'd use those to buy things.
Gotcha.
You know,
it's a loyalty program.
And it is. And
early version.
That we could use some more of that.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about maybe some of your favorite artists, people that you admire. Could be books. It could be people here in town. It could be anywhere.
That's a big list. How much time do we have?
Right.
Maybe your top five, because the follow up to that is just like, what's also kind of inspiring you to create you know,
Robert Rauschenberg is a Texas guy. And he, in the 60s, was doing this art with objects and throwing them together and pouring paint on it. And when I was a kid, I got to see a retrospective of his work, and that was really influential. Kurt Schwitter's a collage artist. Love the way he puts little bits of pieces of paper together. And there's a local artist, Lance Letcher. You've probably seen his work around. He's did the big eyeball that's on the South Congress Strip, which has a pop-up shop parked in front of it. But he and I were in school together, and I've watched him grow a beautiful art career, and it makes me jealous, you know. But and then he looks at me, and he looks at my shop, and he wants it all, you know. So the grass is always greener.
Right.
But It's nice to see someone pour their heart into the work that they make and then it'd be successful. There are so many.
Yeah. Yeah. And then talk to me just about kind of creativity, right? I think this podcast is not just about the homes, but about the people behind them. And then they're all collectors or artists or do it yourself, right? No one buys a weird home. Everyone creates a weird home over time. So just talk to me about your inspiration, what kind of drives you to go create something.
So the things that I've ended up picking up, you were mentioning like the dirty doll leg, you know, it's a lot of, I realized that a lot of the things that I'm most attracted to are things that have some sort of genuine patina or age or fading or wear, and plastic objects that have been in the sun and turned for other different colors of something because of the sun exposure. There's beauty in that, and I that turns me on. I like things that are repaired or monkeyed with to make it work more efficiently. Hmm. I've got a little collection of tools going right now that I'm in love with, and it's all different kinds of solutions, but to make a tool more ergonomically comfortable, make it fit. So some people would wrap fabric around the plier. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it was electrical tape, or sometimes it was cloth, and then they sewed it tight so that, and then sometimes they'd add a whole other piece in there, and it doesn't, it's just janky looking, but they've wrapped it up to where when their hand used that tool, it made it, it was a comfortable use of the tool. It made it more effective for that hand to use that thing. So things that have been monkeyed with, broken and repaired. Broken and repaired things send me. You know, there was an itinerant field, a trade of going and repairing plates or repairing broken dishes.
Wow.
And they'd go from place to place and do little staples. And from the front side of one of these plates that's been repaired, you can't tell that it was ever broken.
Oh, wow.
It's cinched so tight. And so, but if you flip it over to the backside, next time you're at the shop, I'll show you.
Yeah.
But you can walk through. We have several good examples of that. Or a baking dish got broken, and then they would wrap wire around it like a net.
Yeah, because you couldn't just order another one on Amazon back then.
Exactly right. And even if it wasn't a spectacularly important piece of pottery, the effort was made to fix it because.
And a lot of times those things are just your favorite.
I love
them. Anything new. Yeah, exactly.
So broken things that have been repaired is something that I respond to. And then things that have sentimental, something that doesn't, it's not going to be the dollar sign. It's going to be the, what it does for your heart.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite objects in the house, and I think I showed it to you guys when you were there, is a little sock ball that somebody made. Probably for their grandkid.
Mm.
And it's embroidered. On one side, it says the word happy. Oh. On the other side, it says the word birthday.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's priceless. It's one of my favorite objects.
I love that. And I love in your house, too, the whole wall full of Christmas ornaments. Because I'm a big...
That's down now.
It is?
That got disassembled.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
I know. That's probably the only thing that got me into the Weird Homes tour, right?
Oh, well. Not true.
It was that crazy wall.
Yeah. We'll have to put up a photo of that.
Yeah.
Along with the podcast, because it's beautiful.
Yeah. That was spectacular.
Yeah.
Well, what's there again, now? Now you have to...
Now I have a whole bunch of other stuff.
I gotcha.
And that's one of the best things about being in the business of buying and selling is that it can change all the time.
Yeah.
I encourage people to not become static in their accumulation too. And if you've fallen out of love with something that you brought in 10 years ago, then it's time for it to go find another home and allow yourself to find that new love, that new thing.
Yeah, and I know my home is constantly evolving.
Yeah.
And that makes sense because it's like I get bored and I want to switch stuff around, or I see new things I like, or I have a new favorite color every 5 years. Yeah. So, you know.
It's funny because Kathy, who's one of our homeowners as well, talked about in the last podcast of just these people who move into a house and they're like, I really want to do something there or paint that there, but I'm going to sell it in 6 years. Like live in the now.
Live those 6 years with the thing you want.
With the thing you love. Don't be worrying about that you're selling this place, or just like it's future problems that your current self doesn't have and you're worried about it, which I love that she said that.
Yeah, totally.
We painted a bathroom recently and it was, had always been a very nice neutral color. And it is a color, I think it was called screaming yellow or eye catching. And it is the bright, it's like the neon of a school crossing sign.
Mm. Well, when you're trying to wake up first thing in the morning, it's the perfect room to walk into. I mean, yeah. Come on, makes perfect sense.
It's one of those colors that you'd either love or you'd
hate. Yeah, yeah. I love yellow, so I want to go see that.
It's a screamer.
Yeah, awesome.
Well, good. See, why don't you tell us Instagram, Facebook, website, like what's the best way? Yeah. Or if you have some upcoming stuff going on.
For my art, stevewyman.com. For Uncommon Objects, uncommonobjects.com. And we have a presence on Instagram and Facebook, and both for Uncommon Objects, the store, which is open 7 days a week, and for the flea market, Uncommon Flea. And we also have Uncommon Jewels on Instagram, and that's a beautiful account, and it's mostly tiny, small things that are jewel-like. And it's a really pretty account. And then we also have Uncommon Shop Dogs. And that's all the dogs that spend time at the shop. They're, three primary stars.
Can we bring our dog?
Sure. Okay. Bring the dog. We are a dog-friendly business.
Love it.
Harper may go off on your dog, but she'll grow to like him.
Yeah. She won't like anyone, but we'll try. Yeah.
Thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
We'd love for you today to go check out our website at weirdhomestour.com. You can find the new coffee table book that features all the homes that you're hearing about on the podcast. We'd also love for you to check out our Instagram, Weird Homes Tour. And finally, really, we want this podcast to inspire you to show that design has no boundaries and that we would rather have neighbors be strange than be strangers.
Native Solar's energy experts will design and install energy-producing, money-saving solar panels on your home or business that will decrease your electricity bills while increasing the value of your property and the quality of your life. Take your power back at nativesolar.com.